Thank you for joining me today on CMDA Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, the Chief Exhortation Officer of CMDA. Today, I'll be joined by CMDA Senior Vice President Dr. Jeff Barrows in a conversation with Dr. Brent Bowles, discussing his first book, which came out earlier this year, entitled Supremely Wrong: The Injustice of Abortion. Now, abortion is a topic that Dr. Bowles and his wife Julie, who trained as an obstetrics nurse, are both very passionate about, especially after their own encounters with Planned Parenthood and a very difficult decision that they made as a couple when Brent was in his OB residency. I believe that due to his experience as a Christian OBGYN for more than 20 years and their own journey as a couple after an abortion, the Bowles are in a unique and powerful position to share with us about the fight against abortion since Roe v. Wade made it legal in 1973. So I suggest you pour yourself a cup of Joe or some tea, or rev up that treadmill and listen in on our conversation with Dr. Brent Bowles. Well, it is indeed a pleasure to welcome to CMDA Matters today Dr. Brent Bowles, who grew up in Kentucky, but now lives in Middle Tennessee, actually in Murfreesboro, and he's delivered approximately 7,000 babies into the world. Today, he continues to serve families in OBGYN. In fact, he has a robotic surgery coming up immediately after this interview. He works with Covenant Healthcare for Women, and I am also privileged to be joined by our Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows, who also served the people of Central Ohio and OBGYN. Welcome, Brent, and welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Brent, the reason that we have you today is because last year, 2019, you felt compelled to write a book on probably the most controversial topic, at least in the political atmosphere in the United States today, and that is on the wrong of abortion, from a CMDA perspective and from your perspective. And the book is entitled Supremely Wrong: The Injustice of Abortion. Tell us a little bit about what motivated you at this stage in your career to sit down and write this book, Fighting Abortion.
12 or 13 years ago, I was sitting in labor and delivery one morning in January, about to deliver one patient, and another patient came in early labor. And I realized that very morning was the 35th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. Mm. So I had been writing a little bit. I had a blog and I talked about faith and politics, but I hadn't done much about abortion until that morning. And I sat, and as I waited through the early morning hours for that labor to finish, I just started writing my thoughts. And that's where the title came from, that the Supreme Court got that decision so supremely wrong that I don't know that any other decision in their entire history has ever been so far off, has missed the mark so badly. The only thing that comes close was their decision in 1857 in the Dred Scott versus Sanford case. In this one, they decided that unborn people aren't people, and they based it on nothing at all. And it was just, it's not just wrong, it's supremely wrong. And that's where the title came from. You know, I wrote a little bit here and there, and I did a book proposal and forwarded it to two or three different publishers. No one was interested. Never having been published before and such a controversial topic, there was no interest in it. And I got frustrated and just kind of laid it down. I continued to blog and would periodically write articles that would be picked up by news websites like Bound for Life and The Stream and The Christian Post. But I hadn't really gotten serious about writing the book. Always continued to want to. It just, you know, there's always so much to do. But then last February, I was invited, because of my pro-life activism in other arenas, I was invited to attend, along with my wife, a private pre-release screening of the movie Unplanned. Mm-hmm. I've always followed Abby Johnson. I read her book and then was excited to hear that it was being made into a movie. And then when I went and watched the pre-release screening, there were probably 20 or 25 of us that were invited to it. We met one of the producers who was there. We met Ashley Bratcher, the actress who played Abby Johnson. She was there. And seeing the movie really lit a fire. My wife and I came home and over the next two or three days strategized about how we were going to do this, because she is also a talented writer and has a project not related to abortion, but has a faith-based writing project she had been working on, but hadn't made much progress.
She's an OB nurse, is she not, Brent?
Yes, she was a labor and delivery nurse when I met her and we were dating. She finished her master's degree and worked as a certified women's health nurse practitioner until our youngest was born. And then when Abby was maybe 10 years old, she came back to work, but worked as my office manager for several years, not in a clinical capacity, but did the office management for a while. But yes, her background is women's health. So we strategized about it, and we decided that every weekend we would devote at least one entire day to writing. Mm-hmm. She would write, I would write, and we would work on that. And we weren't going to stop until we both finished our manuscripts. So that started early in March. I finished the manuscript by the middle of May. I have a friend that I've met through my writing who had previously edited a lot of my posts for the stream and Bound for Life. And he agreed to edit my book. And he hooked me up with a publisher called New Type Publishing. Had the contracts signed with the publisher by August or September. Had delivery of my first copies of the book in January. So it's been available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million's websites since January.
Your book has a number of things that I think were unique to me, and that is your background in terms of your story with your wife, Julie, in terms of your involvement with Planned Parenthood, as well as your own story together as a couple and going through the pain and suffering through a post-abortion situation for yourselves. Just paint the picture for your background and why this is something you're so deeply passionate about.
We were both in our training at the same time, for her for her master's degree and me finishing my residency. Both of us were required to do clinical rotations at the Planned Parenthood facility in Louisville, Kentucky, which at the time did not perform abortions on site. And that was prior to the approval of Mifeprex for medication abortions. Both of us, when we were rotating at Planned Parenthood, were there simply to do annual exams, pap smears, minor GYN problem visits, birth control prescriptions, and STD screening. Her time as a master's degree student was not compensated. Mine was compensated by the hour. So anyone, in the interest of full disclosure in the book, I felt like I should say that because it would, you know, be a typical Planned Parenthood technique to produce a copy of my W-2s from 1993 or 1994 and say, look, this guy worked for us. So we just put it out there. Right. That we had experience with a Planned Parenthood facility, have been inside it many times. But, I qualified that information by explaining in the book that we not only never saw a patient who was there to discuss abortion, they wouldn't have let us because they are very regimented about maintaining their talking points. And there was an older nurse practitioner who worked for Planned Parenthood and had for many years, and she saw and interviewed all those patients that were abortion-minded. At the time, the Planned Parenthood facility there referred to a number of different facilities. At the time, there were at least three or four locations in Louisville where you could obtain abortion services. So they would see the patients and send them there, but they never allowed us to interact with them. So we never had the opportunity to meet those patients, to interact with them, or discuss things with them. That's different now, of course. There is a new Planned Parenthood facility in Louisville that has just been given a license to provide abortion services, but at the time, the one that we worked in did not.
Well, Brent, I, as I read the book, I really appreciated as well how transparent you were about your own experience with abortion, with your wife now, and I think that was also while you were in training, and I thought it might be helpful for you to address that now many years later, because there's no doubt that there are many students and residents that may be facing their own question about that right now in their lives. And I would wonder what you would want to say to them as they are looking at a situation very similar to what you went through with your wife.
We were already engaged and we're both, you know, living very, very, very busy, very strives as we we're waiting for our wedding date, which was set for 2 weeks after I completed my residency. And we made mistakes. We found out that we were pregnant. And we're just overwhelmed. The surprise, the shock. We shouldn't have been surprised, but we were. And with everything else that we had going on, we rationalized away, you know, all of the important things that we should have been thinking and talking about. And we saw it not necessarily as an easy solution, but, you know, for everything we had going on and for a variety of other social dynamics, we thought it was really the only thing. And we did it. And had we thought it through, had we been in possession of the knowledge and the maturity that we have now, it wouldn't have even been thinkable. So, I mean, it was, you know, our own personal tragedy. It was the worst decision that either of us have ever made in our lives. And, I mean, there's hardly a day that goes by that it just doesn't occur to you, even this many years later. It has fueled our passion for this issue. It is part of what drove me to write this book. And it's taught us a lot about ourselves and about how people react to things like this. Women tend to grieve, and if they do struggle with this afterwards, they tend to grieve. They tend to struggle with depression and self-worth issues. Men tend to be angry. Angry at themselves for failing as a father and a partner. And for many years, that anger is what drove my pro-life activism. Anger at the hands that did it, anger at myself for making that choice. But that wasn't healthy. And, you know, I've come to a place where, you know, anger is not the driving and predominant force. But it has been a real struggle. And it deeply affected both of us. And it was not the right decision.
You can tell that obviously in your book, and I think we are praying that any student that would listen to this podcast or resident that would be in that same position would take that advice and hopefully would impact them to avoid making that mistake. And I think a related question then is that you dealt with a lot of guilt with your wife after that, and there are also probably students and residents as well that are post-abortion themselves and struggling with that guilt. Maybe even it's rising up as they listen to this podcast. What advice would you have for them?
Seek good counsel. Most pregnancy centers, and I make this point in the book, most pregnancy centers, and there are probably 3,000 or more of them across the country, virtually no one in the United States is more than an hour away, hour's drive away from a free nonprofit, you know, crisis pregnancy center. Almost all of them have post-abortive counseling resources. Most of those are geared largely towards women, and my wife has made that her ministry. She is a fully trained counselor for a curriculum called Surrendering the Secret and has facilitated a number of women through that type of post-abortive counseling that is appropriate for any woman that's dealing with it. But many places will also have resources and peer counseling for men that are struggling with it as well. So the resources are there. Reach out for them. Don't just try to deal with this and as some people say, stuff it down and pretend it didn't happen or ignore it, because it did. And that will never be a productive way to handle those emotions and that reality.
Brent, I wanted to just switch gears a little bit. You mentioned that in your book that there are three basic ways for we on the pro-life side of this battle, that there are three ways we can defeat abortion. And you mentioned helping others to see how ugly it is, to truly care for a woman who is pregnant, and then finally hammer away legislatively and politically. Could you just briefly unpack each of those points for our listeners?
This is definitely a battle. You know, it's a battle in the culture wars. It's a battle for the, it's a war for the soul of our society. And it is a battle that's occurring on those three fronts. The hearts and minds of just the general population, that is one front. And for people with pro-life convictions like we have, if we are going to be salt and light to our society, we must educate ourselves on the topic. And we must be prepared to defend the pro-life point of view with anyone who wants to discuss it. You know, the hardcore leftist activists, we are probably not going to sway them with any kind of arguments. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people for whom it hasn't been an issue, who haven't given it much thought, who don't understand the truth, who have only heard the loud, repetitive Planned Parenthood talking points. You know, it's not a baby, it's a fetus, it's this, it's that, it's my body, my choice. You know, all of those things. We have to be prepared to easily and truthfully and competently refute those arguments. And I discuss that in the book, Easy Ways to Remember How to Handle, you know, those most common arguments that people make. Then, in terms of dealing with the individuals who are the parents of an aborted child, who have regrets and struggle, we minister to them. Maybe we don't have the ability or the time or the knowledge to do it personally, but if not, we find a local pregnancy center like the ones I just mentioned. If we can afford to make a donation to help support them, because they're all nonprofit and they all exist totally on donations, we help them. Perhaps we can volunteer time, and you don't have to be a post-abortive counselor to volunteer time. Maybe you just volunteer a few hours a month to answer phones or be at a reception desk or things like that. Anything that we can do to help the people in the pro-life movement who have made this their full-time occupation, then we are reaching those people. Those pro-life pregnancy centers, you know, just as importantly, reach women before the decision to abort has been made and carried out. That first front is helping to educate ourselves so that we can educate the public. Second, we minister to those women that situation who are contemplating it or who have and their lives are just wrecked. We do that. And when we do that, we show the love of Christ in what we're doing. We really do. You know, that's what he did. That is what he wants us to emulate, is serving people, healing people, providing them with truth presented in a loving way, and helping lift them out of the pit they're in. So those are two important things. The third, lots of people are, you know, reluctant to enter a political battle. They say, oh, well, politics isn't my calling. I'm not political. You know, I don't like talking about politics. Well, if too many people in the pro-life movement do that, then we concede. You know, we might as well just concede and walk away, because the other side will not relent. They haven't relented in over 50 years, and they're not going to. They must be made to relent. And the only way to do that is to work legislatively. We must find and support those pro-life legislators who are serious about wanting to do something to advance the agenda of life. Because, you know, you almost have to respect the Democratic Party more than Republicans that claim to be pro-life. Because when they say they're pro-abortion, they mean it. And they will keep their word, and they will do everything possible to advance their agenda, no matter what. those who are on the other side of the aisle. There are some committed pro-life warriors, but there are far too many who use that as just another bullet point on a campaign website.
They just tick a box, don't they? They just tick the box and so, okay, I'm a bona fide Republican because I've ticked that box.
Yes. It is time for us to be willing to really research the candidates, not listen to their rhetoric, but look at their record. And if they have not done anything to advance the cause of life during their career as a legislator, or even worse, they have actively worked against it behind the scenes or under the table, and there are plenty of them, they need to be retired in their next primary. We need to be willing to do what it takes to make that happen. If we are able in the next couple of election cycles to pick off a few prominent examples like that, the rest will come in, they'll come in line. They've never been made to pay a price for being hypocrites on the issue of life. They have never been made to pay a price. And it's far past the time when that should have happened.
What do you think are the chances that the pro-life movement has in the next couple of election cycles of actually bringing down Roe v. Wade? I think you're pretty positive about that. What does that look like?
We need to find a state legislature that's willing to pass a meaningful piece of legislation and have a governor that will sign it so that we can get it into the court system. Of course, it will be challenged. It'll be challenged immediately. But we need to learn from all the things that haven't worked before. And we need to quit playing political games. You know, it's really ironic here in this time with all the chaos we're seeing in our country over ethnic divisions and prejudices and, you know, the 14th Amendment that guarantees people are not to have any of their rights taken away without due process. That was written to overcome the 1857 Dred Scott decision that said black people weren't people. The 14th Amendment was one of the amendments written in the aftermath of the Civil War. And it's just sadly ironic to me that the Supreme Court in 1973 used that amendment, created to protect the rights of all persons, to actually deny the rights of unborn persons. And, you know, we have the pro-life movement has repeatedly challenged that over and over again, and that so far the Supreme Court has always stuck to precedent. There are two things that everyone needs to realize. The makeup of the Supreme Court has changed, and there are justices who have voiced a willingness to overturn precedent if they're presented with a proper piece of legislation to consider. Those include the newest justice, Brett Kavanaugh, and one of the more senior justices, Clarence Thomas. So following the things that they have, the hints that they've given us, there is a proposal in Tennessee, which currently is, again, being subjected to political games in the Tennessee Senate, called the Rule of Life Law Act. And instead of pursuing an overturn of Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton based on 14th Amendment arguments that have previously failed, there is within the earlier part of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Ninth Amendment, which focuses on common law rights and how the rights and the things that we all enjoy and should have protected by our government and by our society are common law rights that are based on an understanding of what those rights were at the time the Constitution was written. And there was a commentator of that era named Blackstone who wrote considerably about what the Ninth Amendment meant and what those common law rights were. And if you understand what the understanding of the unborn person was at that time, then it's clear that the unborn person should be protected just like everyone else. Mm. So focusing on this will bring a situation that's, you know, a conflict between different parts of the Constitution that has to be resolved. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just my opinion. This concept was originally developed by a former state senator who's also an attorney named David Fowler, who heads a nonprofit called the Family Action Council of Tennessee. He has worked with constitutional legal scholars from the law school at Notre Dame, with a group called the Liberty Council, and with a variety of other consultants who have all put together a very good piece of reasoning that lays out, along with the medical information that I provided last year in 2019 for the creation of the heartbeat bill, mm-hmm. it lays out what science says about when life begins, and then what the Constitution actually says about life and common law rights. And that would provide a more proper interpretation of what the 14th Amendment was intended to do. It's just sadly ironic to me that an amendment that was created to protect the rights of one people group whose rights were taken away has been used to take away the rights of another people group. And that's an irreconcilable conflict that has just been ignored. Because Roe was decided as if the only things at stake were the right of a woman to terminate a pregnancy versus the right of a state to regulate the abortion industry. Yeah. That's what the issue was in Roe. The status of the unborn child was completely and totally ignored.
Well, Dr. Bowles, thank you for joining us today on CMDA Matters. And from CMDA, I'm sure Dr. Burroughs will agree with me that we will be praying for you and want to encourage you as you continue to educate and encourage and equip our members to glorify God by promoting and talking about the sanctity of human life. God bless you, and I wish you the best in your surgery, which follows.
Thank you, sir. God bless you all as well.
Some days life feels perfect. Other days it just ain't working. The good, the bad, the right, the wrong, and everything in between. Yo, it's crazy, amazing. We can turn our heart through the words we say. Mountains crumble with every syllable. Broken, live or die. So speak life.
Our Supreme Court, more than once, as you heard from Dr. Bowles, has gotten it wrong. I was so challenged by Dr. Bowles' commitment and passion to bring down the systemic sin of legalized abortion in America. You know, when I moved to Bristol, Tennessee from Kenya in 2016, and for the first time saw the Women's Health Center, where abortions are performed right here in town, I could not believe my eyes, a discovery that when I saw the street signs, I saw that this abortion clinic is located at the corner of Slaughter Avenue and State Street. I kid you not. The irony is tragic. Gallup polls confirm that the right to an abortion versus the sanctity of human life remains the most contentious debate in American society today. Well, in that book, Supremely Wrong, Dr. Brent Bowles has provided us with an insider's survey of the issues that are at stake today. I believe you heard Brent urge us to check out the claims of those who want our votes in this November's election, and they tell us that they're pro-life. Those words are so easy to say, but if someone has a track record, please check it out and make sure that their votes and actions match their reported pro-life position. Well, maybe you or someone you know is struggling with an unplanned pregnancy and the feeling of being trapped. One of the main challenges of pregnancy crisis intervention is finding ways to advocate for the life of the baby while ardently supporting that woman in crisis, and eventually finding a life-affirming solution for both individuals. It's a profoundly challenging but ultimately rewarding work for all involved. There's a book, Pregnancy Crisis Intervention, What to Do and Say When It Matters Most. It's a book by John Ensor, who, by the way, was Dave Stevens' guest about a year ago or so on CDD. It's written to help you know with confidence what to do and say when it matters most. You can find Dr. Bowles' new book, Supremely Wrong, as well as John Ensor's book on pregnancy crisis intervention, on our website at cmda.org/store, or just call 888-230-2637 and order your copy today. Well, up next, I want to introduce you to Ms. Nicole Hayes, who has been serving very successfully as our CMDA Washington, D.C. Campus and Community Director for the last couple of years. And then on July 1st, Nicole added a new responsibility in order to impact state public policy in the United States. We asked Nicole today to tell you just a little bit about this new responsibility that she has assumed while working in Washington, D.C. on your behalf.
I've had a passion for public policy for some time. I have wanted to study how public officials, public servants, and government were effectively or ineffectively serving the citizens they represent through public policy. Beyond that, I wanted to study and view those situations and potential solutions through a biblical worldview. Now, my new state public policy role and work with CMDA helps to answer that desire and call for me. In this new role as Director of State Public Policy, I work with Dr. Jeff Barrows, our CMDA Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy, and members of our communications team to advance the life-affirming biblical principles of CMDA. We do that through ethical positions, through legislative advocacy at the state legislative level, by relationship building and communication and education. No doubt that the issues are complex, but we will spread societal decay quickly when we do not invite God and His precepts into this process. So through such complex issues and decision-making, we advocate for solutions that will move people toward life, toward godliness, which will ultimately preserve them and their future. Prior to working for CMDA, as area director for Washington, D.C., since I've been in CMDA since August 2018, I've had 14 years working as a public relations consultant here in Washington, D.C., where I've been able to effectively serve clients within and outside of the D.C. area. So I'm grateful for that experience. I love this work and serving the Lord, and yet this work cannot be done as a Lone Ranger. You really do need and benefit from the gifts, skills, expertise, and callings of partners, the body of Christ. So we work closely with the American Academy of Medical Ethics, or the AAME, state directors across the country to assist their engagement on state public policy issues. We also build relationships and strategic ally partners with state policymakers and state of national organizations and in-state organizations engaged in state policy issues relevant to CMDA. We also prepare and assist expert witnesses to testify before state legislative and regulatory bodies and to provide counsel privately to policymakers. In the areas of public policy and the impact that CMDA can have, my vision for the future is this. As believers, as stated in Matthew 5, verses 13 through 16, we are called to be salt and light. As salt preserves and stems decay, I pray that through our advancing godly principles into an immoral culture and world, that we will be impactful to help preserve many from the moral and societal decay and to light their way out of darkness.
Well, one of the most frequent questions that I've been asked since becoming CEO as I traveled around the country pre-COVID-19 was, Mike, we're involved in the local CMDA ministry, but tell us, why should we become members of the national organization? You know, I hope hearing from Nicole and hearing from me that in spite of financial challenges in 2020, we are stepping out in faith and growing larger than ever our public policy efforts on both the federal and the state level. And Nicole, she has been a gift to us at CMDA, and she wants to help you in whatever state, locale in which you're working to stand up for biblical principles of health and well-being and health care right where you are. I'm looking forward to hearing more from Nicole in the future, and probably here on CMDA Matters as time passes. Well, as I close, I came across a verse in Ecclesiastes the other day about the unborn child. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 5, "Just as you cannot understand the path of the wind or the mystery of a tiny baby growing in its mother's womb, so you cannot understand the activity of God who does all things. Fetal development is perhaps one of the most wonderful displays of God's marvelous works. Perhaps the best known passage of Scripture about a developing child, unborn baby, is from Psalm 139, verses 15 and 16. And in the NIV, Solomon's daddy, King David, said, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before even one of them came to be." Because God is our creator, He knows us before we are even developed. He loves us and delights in us as He makes plans for our lives. As Christians, we are called to love the ones God loves and to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. May we at CMDA never fail to answer the call to protect what is sacred and defend the helpless. Speaking up for those who cannot speak for themselves, we believe that matters to you. And so it matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Thanks for listening in today. Next week, we will be focused on the very timely topic of vaccinations and vaccination refusals with an update on where we stand with the COVID-19 vaccine development. You won't want to miss it.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.